Welcome back to Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry. We are doing part two of 50 Shades of Grey, issues of pornography, and a whole lot deeper exploration of some of these topics.
And we are doing part two on KRUU Radio 100.1 in Fairfield, Iowa. Solar-powered radio.
And you could email us at mentalhealthmatters@kruufm.com. We broadcast 6:30 on Tuesday nights and rebroadcast Thursdays at 12:30, but we are always on the internet wherever you are on this planet. I am a mental health professional. I guess I'm licensed. I have 5 licenses in 2 different states. And I know it sounds crazy. I've been a professor. I've been a supervisor, and I train a lot of therapists, which is pertinent to this discussion today because it informs how I look at this perspective. Sally, tell us about you.
I'm Sally Hare, and I'm a mother and a writer and an activist. And I'm just here to play in this conversation.
My name's Andrew Perry, and I consider myself a humanist. I'm passionate about world peace, and so in that I have done a lot of research around violence and why violence takes place and the different principles behind that and the styles of thinking that are invoked when that happens. And so in that I kind of look into some war, also slavery, or just anytime there's like oppression or exploitation or violence taking place.
Which is why it's so pertinent to this discussion today. You also have a really fascinating sociological perspective where you bring people together.
Yeah, my dad was a sociology professor.
Well, you also talk like one. Rob.
I'm Rob Huber, and I'm a licensed Presbyterian minister in all 50 states of the United States and any country that allow me to. Anyway, and I live here in Fairfield. I'd like to start this part two out by reading from a email that I received at 12:30 last night about 50 Shades of Grey, which is what originally we started talking about. This email, by the way, quotes from a woman named Gail Dines, who has written a book called Portland, How Porn Has Hijacked Our Sexuality. And this is a quote from it that I'd like to read in order to get our discussion going. Excuse me. The porn industry has hijacked the sexuality of an entire culture and is laying waste to a whole generation of boys, she warns in the book. And when you lay waste to a generation of boys, you lay waste to a generation of girls. When you fight porn, you fight global capitalism. The venture capitalists, the banks, the credit card companies are all in the feeding chain. That is why you never see anti-porn stories. The media is implicit. It is financially in bed with these companies. Porn is a part of this. Porn tells us we have nothing left as human beings, boundaries, integrity, desire, creativity, and authenticity. Women are reduced to three. Whoop, we'll stop right there. From then on, we'd have to bleep it. Okay. But that for me, that's the basis of I mean, you know, in our previous discussion, we had some disagreement, or not disagreement, but different interpretations of what the word, what pornography is. Mm. And I think that's I think that's generally with everyone. We all have our own discussions of what it is. But for me, the energy behind porn is the industry that has turned sexuality, and sexuality is part of intimacy for me. Not sexuality is not intimacy, it's part of intimacy. And the media and business and capitalism has turned sex and intimacy into a money-generating thing. And that's what I'm interested in.
So you're not just even
about.
Then talking about pornography. You're talking about magazines, just a normal magazine cover. Forget even about the biggest magazine for sports. What is the sports
magazine? I don't know.
Sports Illustrated with the swimsuit magazine. Or any magazine or any newspaper. It's really about sexuality.
Absolutely.
And again, is that your perspective is that is a negative perspective from what you read.
Well, I think it's negative from my point of view because it is telling me what I have to do rather than me telling me what I am doing. Like, I've been using Crest toothpaste all my life, and you know, I don't really think that it's really generated the kind of dates that it's supposed to have done for me. But and nevertheless, you know, it takes away my humanity when business and when industry and the media tells me what I need to do in order to be intimate, in order to have love or to have a relationship.
Is this the same discussion that Marilyn Monroe in the 50s was the sex idol because and she was a larger woman, but today, unless you're a size 000 or something, I don't know, that you're not sexualized, you're not attractive. Andrew, what are you thinking?
Yeah, so one thing that struck, so we read this before we started talking, and this time hearing it, it struck me in a totally different way, which is rather than seeing it as porn, specifically the porn industry and pornography, I actually just substituted out for just like this as a symbol that this is a certain way of relating, and that shows up everywhere. And it also revealed to me that there's a deeper agenda of why this all these people, because it didn't make sense to me why it's not like all the banks, the venture capitalists, all these different kind of things, policy that's they're all kind of colluding to allow this to take place. To me, the deeper agenda seems to be one in which exploitation is okay. This is what we're trying to teach people, is that it's okay to exploit people. It's encouraged, and this is what successful people do. This is what happy people do. And so if you see it happening, don't intervene. Don't be emotionally disturbed by it, that this is all as is planned. And I think that when you have that deeper agenda, and why it's an agenda is because when you have a populace that is compliant or maybe what is this other submissive? Is this the mm-hmm. not? It's not even submissive. Sorry, it's just like when it's accepting of exploitation, then it's easy to exploit, and it's easy to use natural resources and populations to generate a lot of wealth to a very small group of people. And so, and the story is, it's never questioned. So anyways, that's kind of what struck me this time, is that all of these are kind of a part of just little bits of education to say that exploitation is okay because we're going to do it over here and we don't want to get in trouble for it.
I totally agree with that. I think that's exactly what it's saying, is that it's okay to be exploitative. It's okay to have this inequality. It's okay that wealthy people are, you know, making, you know, $80,000 per second, $80 million per second, or whatever it is, some mm-hmm. ridiculous amount, while employees make, $8 an hour.
There was an article I read the other day in which the annual income, I think, of someone on Wall Street, we would take us the average income, I think it was $24,000 a year, and this was like, and their income was like in the billions, and it was just like, it's so hard to conceptualize. But this is one of the ways to conceptualize it. It would take someone 32,000 years of our average national income of 24,000 to make that same amount of money.
Yes. So is one person's work more valuable than another person's work if they're working?
Well, Walmart CEO makes as much as the combined income of 80% of the 36,000 employees of Walmart. The combined income of 80% of them.
So my whole thing about it being dehumanizing, it's part of it is just the media pounding us mm-hmm. with these messages that these things are okay. That it's okay for women to be beat up. It's okay for men to be dominant like this. It's not about, you know, consensual adults. There's this whole thing in feminism, and in the liberal media, actually, that it's that free speech is a great thing, you know, and pornography is just free speech. Mm-hmm. But if you really look at it, the underpinnings of it, it's a little bit more insidious than that.
Yeah, well, I think everything has an affect. You know, everything is conveying something. It's telling a story and it's giving you kind of an impression. Everything is kind of political in that way. Yeah, it's curious. The other thing, I still question the idea that pornography is the source or root cause of these rather than just an expression of a deeper culture. That we have a culture that is actually celebratory of exploitation, and then we just see that show up in different media.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
You're pointing at me because this is KRUU Radio 100.1 FM, solar-powered radio in Fairfield, and you're listening to Mental Health Matters, and this is the team, or what do we call it, the group, or the...
The Roundtable.
This is the Roundtable for Mental Health
Matters.
And we're
discussing today about pornography, 50 Shades of Grey, inequality...
I miss Dwayne. I thought he was a nice addition to our roundtable.
Dwayne was great, and we're sad that he had to go for part two. He actually has to do something.
let me ask you, Andrew, to go deeper into what you just said, because I think we're in total agreement that pornography is really one. It just happens to be what we're talking about, but there are hundreds of other areas that are equally as important that are dealt with in the same way.
Yeah, I feel like so it can be a distraction, I think. If we just get so caught up into the sensationalism of like porn and just like kind of the drama around that, I think we lose sight of the deeper issue, which is it's more about kind of like exploitation and dehumanization, which is that the society that we want to participate in? Is that an interesting world for us to live and be a part of?
And exploitation. I mean, for me, exploitation, you know, in many ways is the bottom line. Can you make money? I mean, you know, if you are making money by generating in me a feeling that you know, I ought to eat Cheerios every morning for breakfast, and that's really not good for me. I mean, I'm not coming down on Cheerios, by the way. But I'm just saying, they exploit. What do you mean, really, by when you say exploiting?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's exploitation in, you know, the economy, where a huge percentage of our military budget, our budget, goes towards military and, you know, the war machine. And that's been true for a very long time. So, you know, why are we fighting wars? We're fighting wars so somebody's getting rich, you know, in the fighting of the wars. It's
but
not
bring
about,
that back
I mean,
to mental health, because fighting wars, every one of these aspects individually is a mental health issue, could be explored in the exact same parallels, right? So fighting wars is about keeping ourselves safe. Is that keeping us safe? Mm-hmm. Are we safer because we have a larger military? Are we safer because we are exploiting somebody else, which we might not think of exploiting? We might just think of that we're just getting ahead and surviving. So in terms of relationships, in terms of our own individual psychology, pornography, for example, if it's used correctly, doesn't have to be a negative thing. Again, I'm against this notion of bad and good, right or wrong, left or right. I'm against, we had this whole two shows on black and white thinking. I'm really got what works and what doesn't work. And for me, the whole notion of what Andrew's discussing in terms of a larger issue from a mental health perspective is so powerful to really think about that. In my world, for example, I see people that are addicted to porn, for example, coming back to the issue of pornography as a touchstone. But to me, it doesn't really matter if it's pornography, if it's alcohol, if it's relationships, if it's drama. We're all addicts, sports, whatever. It's about running away. Do we need to be running anymore? Are we living our lives as addicts? And so when we talk about this notion from a larger sociological perspective and bring it down to individual, there really is parallels to start thinking about how we conceptualize things as a bigger concept.
To answer your question, in terms of defining exploitation, it's
there you go.
Yeah, it's what I see is benefiting either off of someone else or even when it's at the expense of someone else. And so when you're benefiting off of someone else's resources and they are not participating in the benefits of that. And then, so I mean, one, even one example comes to mind is like Jaguar, the car, you know, it has this symbol that's using, it's exploiting this symbol that we have come to associate as a very powerful, beautiful animal. And it's not like that animal participates in any way in the exploitation of its image. And in fact, there's probably an argument to be made that its industry has an effect, a adverse effect on the environment of that. So that's kind of like not the typical example you would give. But a lot of times what you look for is externalities when you are externalizing some cost. And so when you buy a cheap clock at Walmart, that the full cost of that is not present in the $12 or so you pay. It's in, because that was made in a country that probably did not have the same environmental standards that we do. And so there was, heavy metals that leached into the local water, and people were poisoned as a result. So part of the cheap expense that we have in buying that product is externalized onto other people. Other people are paying that cost. And so to me, that is an exploitive purchase, if that's a way of understanding. And I think that a term that's also goes hand in hand is domination. And domination defined for me is when there's some individual that claims ownership or superiority or over another person, that because of my position of power, that we're not on the same level, that one person is higher than the other. There's a whole story or narrative as to why that's the case, of why that person has a position of power. But because of that position of power, they get to dictate what gets rewarded, what gets punished. And there's also a little bit of a claim of ownership, that you are my property and I get to control you and determine what you do. And I have some claim over your benefit. Whatever you do, I get a part of.
So exploitation, domination. What do you do instead? What's the other side of exploitation?
Well, I come back to, let me say, a mental health perspective. You talk about the $12 clock or the Jaguar symbol, and I could hear people screaming, who cares? Mm-hmm. Or what am I supposed to do about that? Why does that matter to me? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm living in the middle of Iowa or Chicago or wherever I'm living. Yeah, okay, it's bad for the environment, and maybe the workers aren't treated as well, but it's $12 clock, and so if I bought the $15 clock, would it really matter? And how would I even know? Mm-hmm. So the bigger issue, though, in terms of ourselves, is how can we create that balance within ourselves and in our relationships and those around us, so we're having a sense of balance. Again, part of the problem of the 50 Shades of Grey is you have this really rich guy with this really seemingly uneducated, poor woman, young woman, and there's this exploitive power stance that is destructive, that it is always his realm and she is coming to him. There is no sense of equality. What does that not only do to her, but what does that do to the man to have to be that guy? What does that do to a relationship? What does that do to a child growing up in that system that's now? How are we actually raising kids? How are we then feeling a sense of growth within ourselves? If I have to, for instance, be that man, what does it do to me? Do I have to become narcissistic? Do I have to come lost to myself? Do I have to always get lost in my ego? How do I have a sense of balance? How do I not get lost in another addiction? So I stop pornography and beating my girlfriend, now fiance, now wife, and not get lost in another form of addiction or another sense of seeking stimulation. How do I not essentially exploit myself to myself? I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, it does make sense. And I guess my answer to that is question everything. You know, question the messaging we're getting. Am I being fed this media, constant media diet of women should be this, men should be this, women should be this, I should buy this, I need to, and look at every decision I make. Is being a consumer, like buying the clock, am I questioning where, you know, who's benefiting, who's profiting, you know, why do I even need it? I mean, I try to question every decision I make as a consumer, because I get that our culture is super capitalistic. And somebody's given me the message that I need all this stuff. Somebody's given a lot of people the message that they need to go buy this book and read this book and go to these movies. And, you know, it's a $90 million. This movie made $90 million over the weekend. It's huge. It was a huge bestseller. So, you know, I say question. You have to question. And part of our culture is keeping you not questioning, keeping you asleep, keeping you addicted, keeping you not aware of what's going on. Let's go watch, you know, the en masse, let's go watch the Super Bowl and get involved in this whole, you know, violent, aggressive
I did
drama.
Not watch the Super Bowl.
where wife beaters are, you know, completely, you know, hardly even, there's hardly any consequence for actions. So,
You're right. It is the message. And the message right now is that this is KRUU Radio 100.1 FM, and you're listening to Mental Health Matters. I appreciate what you're saying, Sally, but my, you know, what I hear, maybe, is that it's up to the individual to question everything, is what was your words. And I want something more than that, because you've got an industry, capitalist industry out there. You've got a media out there that's pushing one direction, and we just can't say, "All right, everybody, make your own decision. I'll buy a $20 clock instead of a $12 clock." And by the way, the worst part of exploitation for me on the clock is that 12-year-olds are putting those clocks together in Malaysia, wherever it is. But anyway, right. You know, how do we organize, or how do we get an effort going? How do we pick the topics that other than porn, what are the other, you know, what do we have at it?
Well, there's a couple things strike me. One is, like, in terms of, like, activism, just to like, there is a kind of, like, vote with your dollar type thing. So if you know that, like, you know, clothes from the Gap and Banana Republic and Old Navy are made by women in Cambodia and get paid $34 a month, and that's why you're able to buy things so cheaply, that's an exploitative relationship. If you go there, you are participating in an exploitative relationship. And so maybe you were unknown to that fact beforehand, and now that I've told you about it, and you might feel differently about buying that if it's something that you have if you have an empathetic connection to those women. But anyway, so educate yourself, I think, is one of the things. It's just, like, find out some of this information. To me, that's what the question everything kind of implies, is that you're critically involved with the people around you and in your life and the decisions that you make, and to see how your decisions impact others, if that's something that you care about. So that's one. So education, I guess, is one.
Yeah, right. But we need to be educating. I mean, yes, I agree with you. But how are we getting that? How do we get that education out there? I mean, how do we? You know,
and how do you not get lost in that education? Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, so that $34 that those women are getting paid is exploitive. But then if they, the argument could be made, but if you didn't buy that, they wouldn't have any job and they wouldn't have any income. But the real issue for me, mm-hmm. to go a little bit deeper here, again, I come from the mental health perspective, is even going to a bit deeper, buying the clock, buying those pair of pants, buying the whatever, you know, that clutter, that stuff, you know, I'm seeking happiness outside myself. What is it I'm really wanting will bring some satisfaction, some happiness, some movement in my life?
Yeah, well, I think that's the other half of it, which is and how we show up individually in our life. That if we're judging others based on their appearance and clothes, then we're kind of reinforcing this, like, addiction to consumerism and buying more and more clothes. And so that if you so this is another type of change, I think, like, in your personal relationships, in your job, if you yourself are using this type of energy, you're reinforcing the culture. And that's just, like, the status quo. So if we were choosing to evaluate people based on, you know, credentials and their appearance and everything, then it's kind of...
Thanks for pointing at me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then that's kind of like the world that we get. It's just like, oh, it's all coherent. It all follows that same logic and that same vibe. So it's like it comes with these symptoms, I guess. And so just to complain about the symptoms without being interested in adjusting some of the underlying cause.
I agree with you. How much time we got here?
Five.
Okay, let me quickly. Here's my problem. I agree with you entirely, except I want an organized effort. You know, in 1980, a group of six people sat down in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and said, you know, there are a million children dying in Africa because Nestle is promoting artificial milk to babies by having blonde-haired nurses come down and say, this is what your kid will look like if you feed him this artificial stuff. And what can we do about that? And so we sat down, and over the period of 2 or 3 years, we built the largest non-union boycott in the world and said, don't buy Nestle chocolate drops. That's all. I mean, Nestle was the second biggest producer of food in the world at the time. And we brought them to the knees, and they changed their they changed their advertising, and they stopped sending nurses into Africa, and according to the United Nations, started saving a million kids a year. That was and what I always want to do is I want to look, what's the effort? How can we get together? How can we organize stuff? How do we make Fairfield or Jefferson County Mental Health Alliance really something? You know, make it do something besides meet every Tuesday night. I'm sorry to get off on that, but yeah. But that's where I am. I want to do something. I want a Nestle boycott. I want to boycott.
But sometimes boycotts could very much get lost in. So, were you part of that boycott?
Yeah, I was. My credentials are that I was the national boycott director for the United States. Yes.
So, a wonderful thing in terms of that. But some women can't breastfeed, for example, and so it might not always. Again, this black
but
and white.
But I think the issue with this one, though, is that they're presenting information to
exactly.
People.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
And that the information
haven't done
wasn't
appropriately.
Yeah, because the truth about the situation
exactly.
is that it's
by the way,
like
Leachy was our first people to sign on to the boycott.
It's really, again, about looking a little deeper.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with buying that $12 clock if that's the $12 clock that actually fits. But again, don't expect that $12 clock to bring you happiness or satisfaction in life.
Well, and I think getting back to the shades of gray, too, that this is kind of what came up before, which is, Dwayne was saying that like this show always has a choice. People always have a choice to opt out. And I think that's what these two things point to me, which is that like Nestle is creating this experience where people are getting misled on their choice in this relationship. Does she really have, I don't know in terms of the economic situation, but like really is there choice there? Is there respect for individual? What I was about to say on the last show, again at the deadline, was just that's through this history of kind of scientific research on humans and some of like the terrible studies that have been done, like a longitudinal 40-year study on syphilis in African-American men. But there's a lot of like just really scandalous, terrible, tragic things that have been done in the name of science. And so they got together to create this like Belmont report, and they've come up with three principles of how scientific research has to be conducted on human subjects. And the number one is respect for individuals. And part of that is that you need to make sure that they're making decisions with full informed consent. And so that's a big thing. Again, this theme that comes up, consent. For me, so much of what we're dealing with in society can be distilled down to a single concept, which is consent. Are we doing things unto people with their knowledge? And is it an informed consent?
Like,
I would argue the Nestle's thing is again, these people that were buying this product did not have informed consent.
Exactly
there was an intentional marketing scheme to try to exploit them.
Again, have an informed consent about, does this actually work? Does this not? Again.
And a part of that, too, with the research is that you can't have undue compensation. If the risks are there for individuals, they have to understand what those risks are, and you can't pay them an exorbitant amount of money to
the other two
unduly influence them.
So the other two points, Andrew, real quick, are?
What are the other 2 points?
No, he didn't say that.
He said there were three points.
Oh, that was it, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, well, just in this 50 Shades of Grey, is there undue influence?
Is
the financial situation, does she feel like she has other options? Does she actually experience free will in this situation? Or due to economic and educational, all these other circumstances, does she feel like that's collapsed? And so I'd say, to me, the message mental health-wise is feel empowered in your situation. If something doesn't seem right to you, then don't tell yourself a story that that's okay.
Thank you so much. Absolutely perfect thing to end on. Thank you.
I'm glad we made the world better, by the way.
Activism.
That's right. Thanks, everyone. And we'll see you next week. Bye.